Parents, Raising Financial Freedom is back, here for easy direction for your child's financial perfection. This week's show, we have a guest. Her name is Jennifer Sahadi. Now, Jennifer is a public speaker on financial empowerment and financial wellness. Jennifer is also a TEDx speaker, and today's show is definitely going to highlight that. In today's show, we're going to learn what financial tools and methods your child can use before marriage. I know as a parent, you wish that your child would have a long marriage, but looking at the divorce rate, the numbers are against them. So let's get right into it in 10, 9,
8. Come on, Dad, stop playing around and play the music.
Sheesh, tough crowd.
Have you ever wondered why some people seem to have it all financially? Do well-off parents simply hand their children money? Or is there more to this wealth thing? Welcome to Raising Financial Freedom, the podcast. We are here to talk about everything you never knew to teach your children when it comes to starting their financial future. The principles behind wealth and methods that are out there to teach your child about personal financial freedom. There is no real trick to earning other than learning. We are here to discuss, teach, and grow with you. Raising Financial Freedom, the podcast, with your host and concerned parent, Eric Yard. Let us get right into today's show.
Welcome to another show of Raising Financial Freedom. Today, I would like to welcome Jennifer Sahadi. Jennifer, how are you doing today?
I am amazing. I miss the sound of applause, even just audio applause. I miss being in groups and around people. So that was a beautiful welcome.
No problem. Anytime for my guests. So, Jennifer, let's talk a little news. With all that's happened with coronavirus and all the printing that was done, all the money printing that was done. Wow. I'm starting to feel a little bit of inflation. What is your thoughts on it?
Yeah, not only are you correct in noticing that there is inflation, but I love that you tied it back to what had happened, right? When you print money, inflation is a natural next step. So it makes sense, and we are all feeling it, not just in gas prices, but also in grocery prices. And you also have more happening as well in the world, because some people did manage to save a lot of money and the last year, while other people were not. The ones who were are spending aggressively and driving up prices in that way as well. So there's the inflation impact. There's some pent-up spending impact. Everything is very expensive right now.
Any suggestions on how a family should fight against it or prepare themselves for it?
One of the things to me, whenever there's something intimidating or a little frightening, is to take a step back and take a deep breath and use your most rational self. So I think a lot of people in the housing market and a lot of people who are looking for vacations right now, there's this urgent need to offer a lot more, to do a lot more. And I think there's going to be a lot of buyer's remorse. Okay. So my first suggestion is always take a step back and try to think with a super rational mind. Be patient, do the math, and make sure you're making a decision that you feel confident about.
Okay. I guess I just have to make my money stretch.
There's tricks to that as well when it comes down to really looking at how to make your money last more. There's a lot you can do there too. I think the first step for most people though is to avoid major unnecessary purchases. And then if you were already there, if you were already living super practically, then you'd have to look into some more creative strategies. There are things as specific as dried beans as opposed to canned and frozen over fresh, right? Equal nutritionally, way cheap. Little things like that can go a long way, but it's often not that stuff that catches people up. It's the bigger decisions that catch people up.
The small steps should add up to something big is what you're saying.
The small steps can. But oftentimes when I talk to people and we look at like the nitty gritty, most people have gotten really savvy about the little stuff, and it's the big stuff that's getting them.
All right, let's get into the meat of things. I enjoyed. First, let me tell everyone, first and foremost, that Jennifer is a TEDx speaker. And reason why I connected with her mainly is because of that TEDx. And there was so many points in there that spoken out that I just had to make sure that she was with us today in order to share her points. So, Jennifer, with the numbers for marriage and divorce today, what can you tell me about that?
Absolutely. So I can tell you that most people, when they get married, they're expecting things are going to work. That's why you get married. You're hopeful for that. And what I saw was a lot of times that wasn't happening in my friend and family group with my clients. And I started to really research and look at the statistics and the numbers and then dig into the whys, right? Start to have a few more conversations of what do you think happened? Right? What do you think could have saved it? Or how do you attribute the success to your long marriage? And again, money kept coming up. And at first it sounded so strange, right? Because money is just, it's just simple addition, subtraction, sometimes multiplication and division if you're investing. But it's basic math. We're not talking algebra or calculus. And it seems like that's such a strange reason for things not to work out. But when you come down to it, money really touches so many things. It touches equity. It touches fairness. It touches respect. It can even touch love, right? If you loved me, you would do this. And so I started learning more about it. And I just wanted to share that point because I felt like many people didn't realize that there was this obvious and glaring problem of money being a point of conflict, especially when it's not being discussed, that people didn't even realize was there. They often felt it was easier not to talk about it or better not to talk about it when in fact that was not the case. So there's that short-term discomfort of bringing it up or the long-term discomfort of a financial
what
split.
What is the rate that you see with divorce and marriage?
Yeah, it differs all the time, but it hovers around 50%.
50%, wow. Sheesh. 50%.
Flip of a coin.
Man, does it seem like those numbers get better or get worse?
You know what I've noticed? It tends to be pretty consistent. At least it's not getting worse. And that's mostly for our country. I haven't done a lot of research outside of our country. I'm sure it would be different. But from what I've noticed, it's generally been around that 50%.
Okay. What are the damaging effects that divorce has on finances?
Way too many. Yeah, so it's a ripple effect. So you have the immediate costs, of course, of the lawyers, which are a large part of the financial trouble. But even if you have an uncontested divorce, something that is simple paperwork, and both people amicably split, you might have to sell and split resources at inopportune times. And oftentimes this takes a strain on your career. So you might not be able to keep a high paying job. You might miss an opportunity for a promotion because you're not focused on your career. There's a lot of little ways that it can really affect things.
Wow. I think one of the things that individuals, single people don't realize before they get married is that if you do get divorced, I mean, it's a whole big process. And I think they're unaware of that. How big is that process?
They are. It is a really big process. And the funny thing, too, is even people who have been through it, I don't know if it's this innocence that we sometimes maintain as a country. Even divorced men and women who I spoke to, when I told them I was looking at a prenup, were surprised. No, you have to believe in love. Like you could do one or the other. You're either all in blindly.
Okay.
Or you're destined to fail because you never trusted it from the beginning. And I thought about a prenup like any other type of insurance, right? You buy car insurance because something might happen with your car. You buy health insurance because something might happen with your health. The statistics aren't a 50-50, but they're there and they have a financial impact. And I felt the same way about a prenup. I felt when there's a breakup, that's already tough. I don't know about you, Eric, but when I was younger and I was dating, breakups were devastating. And I remember one of those times thinking, imagine if there was money involved with this. Really, even as a teenager, I had that thought and I thought, oh, no, I'm just never going to get married. And then as I got older, I had a more mature thought of maybe there's a way to do this in a smart way. But we have to overcome a lot of social stigmas to do so, right? Because number one, the first time you bring up a prenup, I would be shocked if the other person said, you don't love me, or you think I'm just trying to be with you for money. Right? There's all of these biases about what that means. And maybe it's not a prenup that works for you, but you should at least have a conversation. Right? There are people who walk into marriage without knowing if their partner has debt or assets. And they don't realize that marriage is a legal contract. You've created a partnership, right? You have started a business with someone else. You have tied your names together and your records. If you want to buy a house, they're going to be looking at both of your credit histories. This stuff is going to come up at some point. So it's a really good idea to talk about it. And that to me is true love. I find something incredibly romantic about that. Right? When you really marry someone and you're vulnerable enough to say everything about me, my full credit history. I feel like that's true love. And I'm an odd person, right? Maybe that's just a really dorky perspective, but I feel like that's true openness with someone else. And if with no one else, it should be someone who will be impacted by it.
How was it for you?
Could you tell me more? How was that for me?
The conversation? You were also married, correct?
I am. Yeah. And it was a super easy conversation. I had brought it up and I said, do you think this is a good idea? And he said, yes, absolutely. But that's unusual, right? I came from the finance industry. He came from the insurance industry. We both know a lot about numbers and risk. And obviously, I am myself through and through. I don't know if any of you can hear my sincerity, but I assure you, like, I am myself to a T. And so to me, that was a really important factor in choosing a partner, was someone who I felt was similar to me financially, someone who was more likely to spend on a vacation than on decorations for a home. Someone who, if they go out to eat, it's rarely, but it's big, right? It's something really fancy. So we knew that we wouldn't have as many disagreements when it came to those day-to-day financial decisions because we were already on the same page. And that's something you never see in Disney movies or even in rom-coms.
No.
Right? People are never like, oh my goodness, he also thinks McDonald's is expensive because why would you pay that? That would be charming. I would love to make a financial rom-com. I would probably be the only person who liked it. But I think there could be ways to bring this more into our friendships, our families, our culture, because it's just not there. Maybe a little bit in Frozen 1 where you had the sneaky prince trying to move in and move up in the world.
So let's turn back the clock a little bit. The individual, the young adult is looking to pop the question or just about to get married. Let's turn back the clock way back to where this adult is now a child. What skills can a parent teach their children to prepare them for a marriage of finances?
Oh, I love this question. Just the way you described it too, when you, I pictured the wedding and then the person got younger in my mind and I like instantly was like, oh, child, let me give you everything you need. I love it. So for me, a lot of it is modeling. So if your child sees you and your spouse talking about money in a calm, an easy way, oh, what a gift that is. We're not taught to hide those things. We're not taught that's high tension, right? Just to have that in the background. I think a lot of times, from my observation, because I'm not a parent myself, but I love many parents. In fact, I respect all parents because it's a really hard job. But when I see parents, there's often the intentional lessons, like you see where they're like, this is how I'm going to teach my child. This is a lesson I want them to get. And sometimes the kids get those lessons, but always the kids just pick up from what you do day in and day out. So if you want your child to be really financially savvy, make sure you're talking to them about it. If you want them to think finance are fun and that these conversations are just common, then make sure that's what you're doing in your household. So a lot of the people I work with, they'll either say, if they have adult children, they'll say, can you talk to my kid? Because they don't listen to me. Or they'll say, how can I be a better role model for my kid? And I love those conversations because that's a great mind space to be in. I not only want to be better for myself, but I recognize that there's a little version of me who's copying everything I do. Like, we are all going to turn into our mothers and fathers. So you have to be the best mother and father you can be.
Right. Wow, that's good. So now tell me, how money in marriage played a part in developing your philosophy?
Absolutely. So I can tell you, for me, I saw my parents who are divorced, and I saw a lot of other divorced couples. In my previous career, I was a retirement education consultant. So maybe some of your listeners have met someone in that line of work, someone at your company. You'd go to work and they'd say, oh, the person for the 401k or the 403b mm-hmm. is here today. And there'd be a group presentation. You'd have an opportunity to talk to people one-on-one. I love talking to people. So I had many thousands of opportunities, tens of thousands of opportunities to talk to individuals. And every single divorcee stuck in my mind and in my heart. And when you'd see those conversations back to back with someone young and eager, it would be really hard not to share the lesson you just took in. So you would have someone who is 50 and they would be a mid-level or a senior level executive, and they were on an amazing trajectory. But because they weren't focused on their marriage, because money became an issue, it then became a bigger issue. So they lost part of their 401k, they lost their trajectory at work, and they just looked brokenhearted and broke. And then you'd have someone come in right after them, and they'd be 20 and eager, and they'd be saving hard, and they'd be doing all the right things. And they would look at me with that eagerness and energy of youth, and they'd say, what else should I know? And before I did my TED talk, I would always look around, because this was not my job. But deep in my heart, I had to say it. I would say, marry carefully and make that love part of your job. And that was the roots of that TED talk, because I realized, even though I was speaking to thousands of people, it just wasn't enough. I didn't want to hear about another case of someone who lost love that could have been saved, who lost money that could have been saved if they just had the conversation. But it's tough, right? Because if you didn't see your parents do it, if you feel guilt or shame around the topic of money, it's so hard to broach, but it's essential to get to that healthier place. Because if your finances aren't in order, it will ripple into everything else. You need to have a strong foundation. And money, unfortunately, touches everything.
That makes definite sense. So how did you get started in money and finance?
What's funny, I feel like I might have just been born this way. My mom and dad tell stories about how I would play store instead of house. My sister would tell me how I rented my Barbie dolls to her.
The entrepreneur.
I think I was always this person, right? Like, one of my dad's proudest stories was a day where I wanted to buy, I remember very clearly, it was a play food set. It was a cake set. I've always loved food. And he said, how much does it cost? And I knew. And he said, okay, that's 3 hours of work. And that was in addition to my normal chores. I didn't get an allowance. And he said, okay, let's see what we can find for you to do. And I think I painted a fence and did some other things. And he took me to the store. And then he said, okay, go and get it. Here's the money. And I was taking too long. So he came to look for me. And he said, what are you doing? And I said, there were two play food cake sets, and they have different pieces and different prices. So I'm trying to figure out which one's the better deal by price per piece. Like, I felt like I was just always this kid. And yet it was never formally taught to me. It was just that thing in the background. Like, my parents would talk in whispered voices about the people who buy soda at restaurants. Can you believe that? They spent $20 just on soda. That was the gossip in my house. And I was like, okay, soda's bad. Don't be a soda drinker. Like, I think if they had been more intentional, it would have been a faster process. But there were little weird things, like money comes from earning it. No one's going to give you money. There were like little weird lessons that weren't specific, but I was raised that way. And then I went to Bryant University. It's a small business school in Rhode Island. And across the street was Fidelity, one of their major offices. And I got an internship there. And that was the first time I learned about 401ks and investing. And I was 21 years old. And I got really mad. I was like, why am I only learning about this now? I have signed loans. I have debt. I am 21 and I'm just learning about investing. Like, where was this? I went to business school. Like, what's going on? And I think ever since then, I've been trying to fix that.
So much time lost.
And it's such an amazing opportunity. And I'm grateful that I learned it at 21. And I met so many people who met me at 30 or 40 and 50. And they're like, I'm glad I met you. I wish I had met you sooner. And I think we all feel that way. There's never too soon. But now is always better than later.
Definitely. Now is the best, especially if you're listening to my show. Do it now. What action steps can a parent take with their children right now in order for them to be on the right road when it comes to marriage and money?
So the first step I would take is to sit down with your partner, your family, whoever are the common influences, and have that discussion of what is it that we want to achieve and how do we want to go about it so that there's some consistency, right? So be really intentional about how are we going to teach the kids about this and how do we bring them into financial conversations? What do we share versus what don't we share, knowing that kids share everything? Right, so you might want to, for example, have a lesson on what minimum wage is and how you might be able to earn more, but you might not want to tell them exactly what you earn because they'll then go to school and say, my dad earns this much per hour. How much does your dad earn? Right. So like just being really thoughtful about those conversations. And of course, there'll be some trial and error. But I think the first step is talking to your partner. And the second step is thinking about the outcomes you want to have.
All right. That makes a lot of sense. And how I look at it also is that when you're talking to your children, try to relate real world situations to them and try to relate it to your situation as much as you can without overstepping. Because
absolutely,
trust me.
And try to relate it to them.
Because trust me, right? They know.
Because what might be real for you might not be real for them. Like talking at a kid's level can be tough.
And trust me, they know. They know some of your private business. You may not think it, but they know some. So bring them in. Bring them in when it comes to money.
You're so spot on, Eric. I want to share with you, when you said that, it made me giggle. And I remembered a presentation I did for a group of 10 to 13 year olds. And this 12-year-old was chatting with me through the presentation. I was like so impressed at how connected they were, despite never having met me, despite being on a virtual medium. And I was talking about a lesson and she said, oh, you should talk to my aunt. You're spot on. Like they notice and they're not shy. Like they want to know more, but they're going to be limited to whatever you expose them to.
So Jennifer, remember that clock I was talking to you about before? Let's turn that dial up. And now this child is no longer a child. They are a young adult and they are about to pop the question or they are about to receive the ring. As a young adult, what kind of checklist should the both individuals be checking off just before they get married?
Excellent question yet again, Eric. So one of the things I want people to think about is the difference between someone you're dating and someone you're married to. Because oftentimes, the perfect person for you when dating isn't the perfect person for you when marrying. Right? And you're giggling. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm talking about as politely as possible. One of the things you want to think about is not, is this person fun? Is this person attractive? But also, if you can get both, if you can get that and look for some of the things that will bring stability into your life. Look for things that will help elevate you. Look for someone who you'd want to start a business with. Someone who'd say, this is going to be my partner. I'm going to be responsible for what they do when they're not around. And they're going to be responsible for what I do when they're not around. Right? Recognizing that there's equal opportunity and risk in a marriage. And that's amazing. But with great power comes great responsibility.
Definitely. What is the biggest challenge you would say for the couple when it's time to meld their finances together?
So one of the big questions is, what is fair? And I think the reason this is the biggest issue is because there's no set answer. So I'll give you an example. Let's say you and I were talking. And we were married and we're saying, okay, you earn $100,000 and I earned $50,000. I would love to say women, I'm the one earning more, but that's just not normally the case. And that's unfortunately where I'm going. Do we say we split the mortgage or the rent 50-50? Is that fair? In one way, it's fair, right? 'Cause we're both using half the space. We have equal responsibility. But another way, other people might not say it's fair because there's not equal incomes. And I am not in either camp. I won't say it should be proportionate to salary. I won't say it should be 50-50. I would say whatever works in your household is the right approach. But that's an important conversation to have. In my relationship, I love theater. I will spend money for theater. I love it. My husband, not so much. So if we go out to theater, I pay. He has exquisite taste in food. We've gone to some very fancy restaurants. I don't want to know what he spent. I would never have spent it. He pays that. And that's how we've found a bit of fairness. So the message is find fairness in your relationship and check in every now and then. Because oftentimes we're like, yeah, I'm cool with that. So just check in, be aware of body language, be aware of what other emotions might be tied to the conversation, but absolutely have it, right? And come up with your own version of fair that you feel really happy with.
Wow. Yeah. Definitely need fairness in a relationship. Definitely. As I think about it.
I feel like that's the real issue when people say we split over money. I feel what they're really saying is, I didn't feel like I was treated fairly.
Well, speak up.
I agree with you. And the funny thing is that people get divorced over money and it's a very expensive choice. So if you can figure it out and not get divorced, that is the better money. Right.
What's the best piece of advice you could give any young couple now looking to get involved with each other and going down that road of marriage?
Talk about some of the big topics before you get married. So when you're first feeling someone out to see if they're even thinking about marrying you, right? Like you can ask, did you ever plan on getting married? Do you have a vision for the marriage? Are you someone who would want a big party, or are you someone who would want a small intimate group? When you think about where you're living in 5 years, describe it. What does that house look like to you? And really listen. Don't like look for the things you want to hear. Really objectively listen. I can tell you, I met with one couple and they were deeply in love and everyone thought they were an amazing couple. And when they talked about their future, I suddenly felt really sad because I realized I was hearing two very different visions and they didn't know it. They didn't know they weren't on the same page, even as they were talking about it, because they were in love. You can be really blind to things when you're in love. So I was glad to be there and to let them know, okay, this vision you'd want to take these steps for, and this vision you'd want to take these steps for. Is there a middle ground? What do you see? How would you work with these two visions that are different approaches? So having those conversations, super important. And make sure it's not miserable. So do something fun afterwards, or do it outside of the house so that if it is tense at first, that's not tension you're bringing into your home, around your kids, or in a space that you want to be happy and full of love.
All right. Jennifer, I want to thank you for coming on the show and sharing. Let the listeners know where we could continue this conversation with you and what you have going on in the future.
I can't believe the time went by so quickly. So anyone can find me if you know how to spell my name. It's Jennifer Sahady, S-A-H-A-D-Y. With that, you'll find me on LinkedIn. My website is jennifersahady.com. My email is jennifer@jennifersahady.com. It's a really unusual name. So once you have it, you can find me any which way. I'm happy to answer any questions for free. I love working with individuals, with groups. A lot of companies have brought me in, which I like the best because then the companies pay me and I can just help people. Those are all some of the things I love to do. I just did an amazing Women's Summit presentation. And I'll be doing another one in the fall because I think oftentimes men feel more comfortable having this discussion. So I've been focusing specifically on helping women, but I'm not going to exclude anyone. So if you have a question, please reach out to me. I'm honest and sincere, and I want to make sure that we can preserve as much love and as much money as possible.
I like it. I like it. Don't leave anyone out. Yes. Jennifer, you definitely stirred up food for thought. And once again, I want to thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you, Eric. I want to thank you for having me on the show. I'm honored to be one of your guests. You're a very gracious host, and this was a delightful conversation.
Once again, thank you. Now, as a parent, I already felt this way, but after listening to Jennifer's TEDx talk and also talking with Jennifer on the show, it basically solidified for me that we as parents need to prepare our children financially as single adults and also prepare them as married adults when it comes to finances. So in the event they do end up single again, they will be just fine because you know what? You prepared them. Once again, as always, I would like you to share with other parents. And join us for the next episode where you will get easy direction for your child's financial perfection.
We really hope you enjoyed this episode of Raising Financial Freedom, the podcast. Stay connected with us directly through raisingfinancialfreedom.com. You can also join the discussion on social media, which you can also find links on our website. If you would like to speak with us, please send us an email through info@raisingfinancialfreedom.com. And as always, thank you for pushing your mindset towards a better reality. This concludes the most thought-provoking portion of your day. Don't forget to please like and subscribe to stay fully up to date. Until next time, be kind to yourself and each other.